Fire was a tool that we used to manage the landscape over the last 10,000 years. And we were incredible fire scientists. We knew how to burn the grasslands to increase the health of all the life. And so we were constantly burning grasslands, and that had a huge impact on the health of the bison specifically. Mm-hmm. And there were so many buffalo in North America that they were a keystone species, and they affected all the other species that lived here on this whole continent. In fact, we know now that the decimation of the buffalo was so extreme that it could have even impacted the climate. And the mini ice age in the 1800s was likely caused by the decimation of not just the buffalo, but indigenous people and our management of the landscape using fire.
Hello, and welcome to Life with Fire podcast, the podcast that explores our relationship with wildfire and how we can better coexist with it in the future. I'm your host, Amanda Monti, and I'm so excited to share a special episode of Life with Fire with you today. But before we get into that episode, I also wanted to give a huge shout out to the American Wildfire Experience and my friend Bethany Hanna, who provided a grant to support this episode, as well as another one that will be released later this year. The American Wildfire Experience aims to amplify the experiences and creative talents of wildland firefighters past and present. The grants are given to photographers, writers, videographers, and other creatives who work or have previously worked as wildland firefighters and are now creating work around the topic of wildfire. I've been honored to receive three grants from the American Wildfire Experience, which has been such a privilege. The first grant supported a multimedia project that I did while I was working as a hotshot back in 2019. Another one supported the creation of this very podcast, as well as the most recent grant, which is supporting my goal to get more voices represented on Life with Fire podcast. That was the grant that I received last summer and the one that supported this episode. So that brings me to today's episode. This one was created in collaboration with the Montana Media Lab, which is a program of the University of Montana's School of Journalism. The Media Lab aims to give voice to the untold stories of the West, and you will hear a little bit more about this organization and the things that they do, the programs that they run in a little bit here. But in pursuit of that mission, Life with Fire and Montana Media Lab collaborated to have some of this funding support their Winter Youth Voices program, which is a program to empower Indigenous and rural youth to learn more about audio storytelling while also sharing stories from their communities. So not only did this collaboration result in a short series of episodes that you'll hear here in a bit, but it was also an opportunity to have these students interact with folks in their community who they might not have normally had exposure to. It was awesome to hear these episodes. They were talking to elders in their community, to firefighters and biologists in their community. It was especially cool to just hear them gaining more understanding about the cultural history of fire in their communities, as well as on their ancestral lands, from elders in their community, from fire management officers in their community. And to be able to hear that understanding happening and hearing this information sharing happening in real time was a pleasure. It's really cool. It was really cool to hear. I hope you guys think so too. It was really endearing, and it was cool to hear them learning more about that cultural heritage kind of as they went. So I thought they did a really good job exploring the topic of wildfire, like through the lens of their communities and their connections to wildfire. And I found their perspectives to be really valuable in better understanding how communities sort of connect to and think about wildfire. The episode begins with a short introduction from Mary Auld, who is the director of the Montana Media Lab, who was the person that reached out to me at the beginning of the process to kind of pitch this idea, which I loved hearing from her. And I was like really excited when this came across my desk. And I'm very happy to be finally releasing this episode after months of hard work on the part of the students, as well as Mary and the teachers at the high schools where these students attend. So Mary will explain a little bit more about the program, as well as the communities and students that they serve. And then you'll get into our episodes with the students themselves. And there are four stories that are featured here. And as I've mentioned, they're about everything from how wildlife is impacted by wildfire to what it's like having an incident command post pop up at your high school in your high school softball field. That one was pretty endearing and pretty fun to listen to. So that's the last episode. I would really recommend you stick around for that last one. And in general, I hope you enjoy this one. It was a fun thing to put together. It was a really great collaboration. And it's a real honor to be able to provide a platform for these students to work on their audio storytelling skills, on their interviewing skills, and to learn more about wildfire's impacts on their communities. This type of storytelling is really what it's all about at Life with Fire, and that's why I'm so excited to share this episode with you guys. So without further ado, let's get into our episode. Thanks as always for listening, and I hope you dig this one.
I'm Mary Auld, and I'm the director of the Montana Media Lab at the University of Montana's School of Journalism. We're an audio journalism lab that gives voice to the untold narratives of the West. One way we do that is by empowering teens in indigenous and rural communities to tell their own stories through audio journalism. The pieces you'll hear today are from Montana Media Lab workshops in Browning and Florence, Montana. Over the course of one semester, instructors taught high school students all the skills they needed to develop an audio story idea, to report it, and then to produce a final piece. Students and community members told us this project made them feel like their perspectives were important and that they were being included in broader conversations about wildfire. Thank you, Amanda, for amplifying these stories. This first story is from Browning, Montana, headquarters for the Blackfeet Nation. There, the staff of the school newspaper, Itumo, brilliantly transitioned from print to audio journalism. The reporters explored the unique experiences of two community members who volunteer their free time to fight fires on the Blackfeet Reservation. Their reporting started with a conversation with the school librarian about what it's like to be a woman and a mother fighting fire. That interview led to another one about Blackfeet people's deep relationship with fire.
I'm Tristan.
I'm Callie.
And I'm Chloe.
We go to Browning High School, just 12 miles outside East Glacier, near Glacier National Park. Where I'm from, wildfire is a big deal. It's a geographically perfect place for an inferno. It's windy and dry. We are surrounded by forests and grasslands. In other words, fuel. Amy and Nicholas are both volunteer firefighters for East Glacier, and through their work, they both feel closer to their community. But they say colonial influence and climate change have made it so much worse. Now, as the issue comes to a head, they're trying to find a way to control the destruction. Amy's been volunteering for the fire department since the winter of 2020. Her boredom during the COVID-19 pandemic gave her extra time, and her daughter was getting older. She believed that being in a traditionally male role would be exciting for her daughter to witness. Amy hasn't dealt with any large structure fires, but she shared her experience with her first large wildfire.
It was a large grass fire, and it was in the middle of the night. The adrenaline was going, and I realized, oh, yeah, I'm actually going to do this. And as we drove from East Glacier into Browning, and we kind of crested the hill, and then we could just see the whole sky lit up, we were like, oh, okay, it's a really big fire. You know, just feeling the weight of the responsibility of what we were doing.
After this first real experience, Amy was hooked.
I mean, I've lived here for 23 years, and I've never felt more connected to this place than I have through my work through the fire department. I feel more a part of a larger family.
But Amy's not alone. She has worked alongside Nicholas Rink in fighting wildfires on the reservation. He hopes to bring back to the community the way that our Native American ancestors managed the element of fire and used it to our advantage.
Fire was a tool that we used to manage the landscape over the last 10,000 years. And we were incredible fire scientists. We knew how to burn the grasslands to increase the health of all the life. And so we were constantly burning grasslands, and that had a huge impact on the health of the bison specifically. Mm-hmm. And there were so many buffalo in North America that they were a keystone species, and they affected all the other species that lived here on this whole continent. In fact, we know now that the decimation of the buffalo was so extreme that it could have even impacted the climate. And the mini ice age in the 1800s was likely caused by the decimation of not just the buffalo, but indigenous people and our management of the landscape using fire.
Amy and Nick have dedicated so much of their time to learning and growing in order to restore the relationship with fire that we once had, to work with the flames, not against them.
It really has made me love and respect people in this community. What I have learned through this experience, more so than anything that I wish I could like share with students, and really anyone, is like, open your eyes to all possibilities.
However, so many aspects of our lives have changed the way that we think about fires. It also resulted in the different perspectives of those who control the fire and those who stand by and watch the flames grow. I was just thinking about, like, the difference between working with volunteer fire and, like, experiencing those fires in that perspective, whereas, like, my perspective, worried that I'm going to lose my house to a large grass fire, I couldn't see my house. It was quite literally just black. The whole sky was black. And I just remember being really scared. And at the time, we had a week-old puppy we were taking care of, and I was scared he was going to die because we weren't able to take care of him or keep him warm sitting in a car for 4 hours. I was listening and comparing my experience with that to yours, like where you're like, the adrenaline felt good. I felt really fulfilled. Whereas me, I was terrified.
I remember thinking of you, and I remember thinking of you guys, all the folks in Blackfoot, and just like thinking, you better do a good job because these people are counting on you, you know? Like, you realize it is important what you're doing, and it's no joke. Like, you need to do a good job because people are counting on you to do what you're trained to do and protect their structures and protect their animals.
I think the only thing that stopped it from reaching our house was that my dad, he had mowed around the house. Mm-hmm. And then we were lucky enough to have our neighboring Hutterites. They came down and helped us put it out mm-hmm. before the fire department ever even got there.
And that's an important thing that I guess I never realized until I did work those fires is how many, like, you have farmers that show up with their own little water trucks. You got, yep. like, all these people that come out to fight these fires. And, you know, because we do live in such a big space, it takes a lot yeah. of people.
Everyone experiences wildfires and their effects differently, leaving us with those memories and taking away wisdom that can last a lifetime.
Our lives and fire are, you know, forever changed.
The next story from Browning High School explores the experience of one retired Blackfeet hotshot. When Montana Media Lab instructors asked who we should talk to about wildfire on the Blackfeet Nation, reporter Ariel McFadgen knew her grandpa would have something interesting to share. Her pride in her grandfather shows through in the title she gave this story, Danny, the legend himself.
I'm going to go back to how wildland fire, every fire is the same size when it starts. It's just like a little match.
I'm Ariel, and this is our producer, Amanda.
Hi.
We go to Browning High School. It is right outside of Glacier National Park here in Montana. Every year, we have to worry about wildfires, but the wildfire season ain't nothing new. It happens every year in August, and it has been happening before our parents or even our grandparents have been around.
My name is Dan McFadgen. I'm a former graduate of Browning High School, 1971.
This is my grandpa, Danny. He is a former hotshot. We had the opportunity to speak with him, which is where he explained how everything has changed from when he was a hotshot.
So we have a rich history. Back in the early days, I think our natives used fire as a way to burn the grass to create an environment that was rich for the buffalo to graze in. So man has always been dealing with fire. Firefighting in the United States really didn't get going until after World War II. And in Missoula, they created what is called the smoke jumpers. The other thing is the evolution of hotshots on the reservation. In 1970, when I was a senior in high school in Browning, on November 10th, they took out 22 crews of firefighters out of Browning.
While Danny was a hotshot, 462 Blackfeet men went off to California.
And during the day, you could do everything from fighting the fire to building a fire line. And if you're on a night patrol, they used to do back burning, and that's where they relieve the fuel from the fire.
My grandpa fought fires for 2 years.
I wanted to get out of Browning, and I wanted to make a bunch of money and see the United States, so I volunteered. And you leave the reservation, and we would be gone. One fire, I spent a month in Arizona living in a dude ranch.
But when they asked him to become a smoke jumper, he was out.
It's too dangerous. Back in the day when I fought fire, the transportation was a low-bid government contractor.
But even though it was dangerous, that didn't stop people from doing it.
And in August 5th, 1949, 15 people jumped out of a plane down by Helena, and 13 of them died within 2 hours. After that horrible accident, what happened is the science took over. And as a hotshot from Browning, I would see my native brothers all over the United States fighting fire, and we'd have social gatherings at the different fires, and it was a good experience.
One little thing that he left out is that he was student body president in 71, and he had to stand up in front of the school board to explain why he was gone to fight fires. Nowadays, he is helping kids in the foster care system.
In Browning, Montana, I'm Erin McFadgen.
Next, you'll hear from students who wanted to make an audio portrait of Blackfeet Nation's unique Chief Mountain Interagency Hotshot Crew. This Native American hotshot crew is named after the culturally important Chief Mountain near Browning. The reporters demonstrated the value of their local expertise while they were making this story. Instructors suggested the reporters interview each individual separately, but the reporters insisted that in order to capture the group's camaraderie and cohesiveness, they should be interviewed all together. That decision really brought this story to life.
Hello, my name is Sierra Friedenberg.
And I'm Danae Marino.
We're journalism students at Browning High School in Montana. It's very close to the Canadian border in Glacier National Park. Today we talked to Carter Gallino and Jace Gobert. Jace is a Chief Mountain Hotshots crew member.
So it builds friendships, especially with crew like Chief Mountain. It's more of like a brotherhood, you know, and not just in the sense of like, you know, it's just all guys, you know, there's been women on the crew in the past.
Chief Mountain Hotshots is a Native American firefighting group from the Blackfeet Indian Reservation that has been fighting fire for over 30 years.
It's like a family, you know. You'll make friends and you'll spend, you know, 21 days out there with the same guys, do the same things every day. You know, you're sleeping by these guys and you wake up next to them and then you work the whole time with them. It's a brotherhood, you know. You're going to have some times where there's like a lot of togetherness, you know, you're at each other's heads. But like, you know, as soon as you get home and you look back on what you did, you know, you're proud and you're proud of who you did those things with. And it takes a special type of person to want to do this type of work.
Carter Gallino is that special type of person for this type of work. He has been fighting fires for 16 seasons. Now he works as fire management.
We do it because we enjoy it. You know, I mean, we don't enjoy being stink, but we know we enjoy the work. We enjoy being out there.
Carter loves his job so much, his daughter decided to follow in his footsteps and be a part of the fire management world too. Jaslyn is a Blackfeet Fire Management engine boss.
You know, they're a really close-knit crew. And like any family, you can have your falling out, but at the end of the day, you got to mend it and make it right again because he depends on them for his safety just as much as they depend on him. And vice versa with me and Jaslyn, you know. When Jaslyn's out there, her guys on that truck are entrusting that she knows what she's doing and that she's doing the right thing to make sure that she's keeping them safe.
Even though they're family, being close with other members is important because it makes sure our community and other communities are safe.
If we send someone out there lacking knowledge or incompetent, then we're not doing justice to the firefighters and we're not doing justice to the community that we serve. So, you know, and that's not just our community. Like when Chief Mountain leaves or when my engines detail out to another agency, they're still representing our tribe with that sweater on, with that truck they're driving, but they're also serving that community that they're part of.
At Browning High School, we are Danea
and Sierra.
This next story is from a team of reporters who wanted to investigate how wildfires affect wild animals. They went straight to the people in charge, the Blackfeet Nation's Fish and Wildlife Department. In this story, you'll get to hear a bit of the reporting process as the teens skillfully interview an expert from their community.
Okay, we're at Fish and Wildlife.
You got
Hi, I'm Shiley.
Hi, I'm Rihanna.
Hi, I'm Bailey.
We're Native American high school students from the Blackfeet Reservation. We are interested in learning about the impacts of wildfires on our community and wildlife.
I see a flag, an elk, a gyal,
what?
A bear. Oh, yeah.
A lot of wildlife here.
How are you guys? Yeah. What? Hi, my name is Gerald Buzz Cobell. I'm the director for the Blackfeet Fish and Wildlife Department, and I've been working in this capacity for about 4 years.
Buzz hasn't always worked at Fish and Wildlife.
I've been involved in fighting fire when I was a young man. I worked for Glacier Park as a ranger. So whenever there was a fire, I would get called out on fires. But it was, you know, fun to do it because you'd get paid, you know, hazard pay. So it was a good way to make extra money when you're a family man.
Buzz shared about a personal wildland fire experience.
I remember one time I was fighting a fire in Glacier Park. We were told to go across the Middle Fork of the Flathead River because the fire had jumped across the river. It was blowing that hard. The fire went on the other side. They wanted us to go over there and try to stop that fire. When you're a young person, you know, a lot of times you just think you got to do what people tell you to do. But when there's safety things involved, you have a responsibility for your own safety. So we just said, no, we're not doing that. We're not going over there. And while we were arguing about that, that fire took off, and had we been over there, it would have, you know, overran us. So it was kind of an eye-opener for me that you really got to look out for your own interest.
Buzz said his firefighting career ended after a long hike.
We were hiking up this mountain. It was like 103 degrees, and after that experience, I decided I had enough of that.
So Buzz decided to go into fish and wildlife management, and he ran into fire there too.
Okay, so in your words or in your opinion, what animals are affected the most by wildfires?
I think all wildlife are affected by wildfire. I think some animals are benefited by what happens to the vegetation after a wildfire.
Buzz talked about how Native Americans have used the benefits of fire.
Native Americans used to use fire as a management tool, you know. So we weren't just like passive users in the environment, but Native people actively managed the landscape. So if you have a fire go through there, it removes a lot of that vegetation that prevents a grazer like an elk or a deer or a moose to be able to get down to where the grasses are growing each year. And so fire does remove that, and then the new grasses and forbs have a chance to come up. So,
Buzz appreciated us asking him about wildland fires.
Thank you, girls, for your interest in getting the word out. We actually need people like you to kind of tell our story, because that's how we obtain funding to do our work, is by having people like South kind of get the story out there.
For the Life with Fire podcast in Browning, Montana, I'm Shiley.
And I'm Bailey.
And I'm Rihanna.
Thank you to Browning High School journalism teacher Taylor Crawford for coordinating this partnership and for all her work teaching these young journalists. Thank you also to the community members who took time to be interviewed and to Browning High School for hosting us. This final story is from Florence, Montana, where reporters from the Florence Chronicle high school newspaper investigated a time when a wildfire had up-close impacts when it transformed their school.
Lolo Peak is a favorite hiking spot for people living in western Montana. Sitting at over 9,000 feet of elevation, the peak has awesome views of valleys in multiple directions.
But in 2017, it caught fire. A late July lightning strike ignited a blaze that burned for over 2 months through more than 53,000 acres of land. That's more than 40,000 football fields.
During the fire, firefighters made a camp in the small town of Florence, Montana, population about 800. Where do firefighters set up camp in such a small community? In Florence, they went to the high school, the one I go to now, and they left a big footprint.
You can put together essentially a small city for firemen and firefighters, like, very quickly.
That's Chris Kovach. He was an EMT for the Wildland Firefighters camping there. And he was also the school softball coach.
You can set up a camp, you know, within 24 to 48 hours to house 400 or 500 firefighters and then just keep expanding from there.
Kovach said this fire may have led to 800 firefighters on scene. This means for 2 months, the town of Florence nearly doubled in size. And it turns out schools are a pretty good place to house a temporary fire camp or an ICP, incident command post.
Schools are a good place to identify as an ICP just because there's a lot of areas to sleep and there's a lot of areas to camp. The technology is there. The infrastructure is there for Wi-Fi, phones, good radio combo.
Imagine a small high school turning into a base camp for huge wildfire.
So classrooms were used for those different functional groups, for logistics, for operations, for plans, for finance, for liaison.
The medical team has a corner. Tired firefighters covered in sweat and ash come back from the woods needing hot showers. And they're hungry, too. A temporary camp kitchen feeds them. As the fire grows, more people show up to fight it. So their camp grows bigger, too.
There to help the firefighters navigate the school grounds was Bud Scully, superintendent of Florence Schools at the time.
They wanted to put camps out on the football field, but it was August and football season was just around the corner. So then they asked to use the softball field.
And that's where a lot of them ended up. Kovach says a little more space can go a long way for these firefighters who work 16-hour days in 2 or 3 week stretches.
They don't want to be stacked on top of each other. You get up in the morning and, you know, you're standing this far away from me. I don't want that. I don't want that person over there.
But that extra space meant extra damage. Some sprinkler lines and a fence were broken. And, of course, the field wasn't getting watered when it was full of tents. That was in September. But it wasn't fixed by the time spring rolled around. So the softball team relocated.
We actually had to move the girls' team to play at the park that year. I think they won the state championship that year, too.
And that's how the Florence Falcons ended up with a new softball field. They received some money from the federal government to pay for the incidental damage caused by the firefighters.
But since they were rebuilding anyway, the community went big. In the end, about $100,000 went into the new field, which included new dirt, fence repairs, and a concession stand.
Even with the challenges of homing hundreds of firefighters, the communities that take on those challenges are usually happy to.
I just think that, you know, the whole community did a great job of supporting the firefighters and recovering from it.
After all, the firefighters were protecting our town and our school, too.
In Florence, Montana, for the Life with Fire podcast, I'm Lily.
I'm Reese.
I'm Shiloh.
This project was a collaboration between the Montana Media Lab and Florence High School's journalism class. Thank you to Florence High School teacher Dirk Schmidt for coordinating the project, to Florence High School for hosting us, to all the community members who were interviewed, and to AMB West for supporting this project.
You can learn more about the Montana Media Lab at montanamedialab.com.
All right, folks, that is what we have for today's episode. I wanted to once again thank the students of Florence and Browning High Schools, their journalism classes, for contributing to this episode of the podcast. I wanted to thank Mary from Montana Media Lab for the collaboration opportunity, for the teachers of these journalism classes for kind of helping out along the way and helping out with this collaboration, and to you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. Just a reminder that this episode was supported by the American Wildfire Experience, and we would highly recommend that you go give them a follow on Instagram at Wildfire Experience. We will link to that in the episode's show notes. And you can also follow the Smoky Generation, which is another organization that supports storytelling in this space. If you are interested in a grant like this, they should be opening over the next couple of months at some point. Just would recommend going and keeping an eye on those Instagram pages that I mentioned. And again, I will put those in this episode's show notes, as well as information about the American Wildfire Experience more generally. And that is all I have, I think, for today. If you really enjoyed this episode, we always are welcoming support on our Patreon, which I will also link to in our episode's show notes. So with that all being said, I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will catch you on the next one.